comes from knowing that God is our home. And I believe that Moses had some concept of that when he said this in Deuteronomy 33, verse 27. We know his story. He had been through so much in life. Literal up and down, literal mountaintop experiences with God. He's encountered God in a way that I don't think very many people ever could even comprehend, his actual face-to-face encounters with God, the holiness and the power of God to do miracles, but also the desperate times in his life where things seemed to just be so terrible and he just wanted to quit. Quit life, quit his job, quit the role that God had, and the things that God had given him to do. He just said, God, I can't do this. I can't do this. And so just before his death, he stands in front of all the people of Israel and goes through the tribes one by one and declares God's prophetic words over them. And he sums it up with this in verse 27, as I say, of Deuteronomy 33. The eternal God is your refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. And that verse is a comforting verse, one that's well known, that comes up and we read over and over again when there's times in our life when things are going wrong. And Moses was able to declare that at the end of his life. And I often think that the eternal God is our refuge is probably something like this picture. That place of serenity, that place of knowing that heaven is tangible, that we can almost touch it. We can just sit there and gaze at the goodness of God and the wonder of God. But it's funny enough, that word there for refuge, and the eternal God is your refuge, actually describes that. It's saying it's God's dwelling place, it's heaven, and it's just God is very so present in the situation. But if we look closer at this word as well, it's quite a unique one. And I believe that Moses, based on his experience of God and the things that he'd gone through, used this with great intent. He was an intelligent man. He'd been brought up in the courts of Egypt. He had a good education and he's an intelligent man, as I say, and he knew a lot of stuff. And he'd learned a lot of stuff in life. But I'm sure he used this word for refuge in this verse with great intent. Because although it means that God is present, that is in his heaven and his dwelling place is here with on earth as well, it also means this. And it's funny that we twice in the songs this morning we've talked about lions. And it says it's a unique word because although it talks about God's dwelling place being on earth and in heaven, it also means it's a dwelling place of wild animals. And it was used to describe when a city had been decimated and was now desolate, what once was glorious and beautiful had become a desert place. It was a place of ruins, really. And wild animals had come and taken over those ruins and that desolate place. And they'd taken it over to become their home. And so it's a really strange word because although it talks about a refuge for God and a place where God dwells, it also is a refuge and a place for wild animals in a desolate place. And I believe that Moses was saying there uniquely that God is equally at home in a den of wild animals as he is in heaven. Those things that you're going through in your life that may feel desolate, that may once seem to be a city and a place of beauty and a place where good things were, that now appears to be in ruins. And you say, God, where are you in this? Just as we've been heard from Amy this morning. God, where are you in this? How can your dwelling place and your goodness be in this? I look up to the heavens and I see you there, but God, I can't see you anywhere else. And God says, I'm equally here in the den of wild animals. And I'm equally present here as I am in heaven. And you can find God and you can find home and my dwelling place in the ruins. You know, home can be a complicated thing. And Jesus equally found this in Mark chapter 2. A familiar story. And I just caught one or two things as I reread this passage again a few weeks ago. It says a few days later, when Jesus again entered Capernaum, the people heard that he had come home. And they gathered in such large numbers, there was no room left, not even outside the door. And he preached the word to them. The people had heard that he had come home. I'd never really noticed that before. Jesus had left what was his home, where he was born, a place called Nazareth. And he comes to Capernaum. And Capernaum actually means village of comfort and compassion. So Jesus leaves a place where people didn't believe in him, and it was a difficult place for him. And he comes to a place of comfort and compassion, and Mark says, Jesus is home. And he comes to Peter's house, and they believe, and commentators believe that he was actually coming to live and spend time with Peter in his house. And there he was in that home, and people had heard he was there. And they gathered at the door so that not even any room was left, not even outside the door, and he preached the word to them. But you see, even with Jesus in the house, things can get messy. And we know the story, don't we? How some friends come, as we read that passage, some men came and brought him a paralyzed man, and they carried by all four of them. And since they could not get Since they could not get him to Jesus because of the crowds, they made an opening in the roof above Jesus by digging through it and lowered the man on the mat he was lying on. And when Jesus saw their faith, he said to the paralyzed man, "Son, your sins are forgiven." We see men who are desperate for God and desperate to be in the presence of God and in the presence of Jesus for something to happen in their lives and the lives of their friend. And we know the story so well. From Sunday school upwards, we probably heard this story about the friends letting the man down through the roof. Something had a direct impact on Jesus, on his well-being, really. Because the place where he was living and going to spend the night and now had a hole in the roof. And he would have been an honored guest, and he would probably been actually on the top floor. They would have probably had a spare room on the top floor for guests. And so where he was sitting that day, but not just that, the whole of the rest of his day was a bit ruined, really. Because now where he was going to spend his night had a hole. But the interesting thing I read, and I hadn't come across this before, William Barclay, a theologian, said this, that this was quite a common occurrence, apparently, making holes in the roof, because that's where they would bring coffins in and out when people had died. Because in Jewish culture and Jewish law, if you touched a dead body, you became unclean. And so they got round this by, so then rather than take the body out through the door, so that just in case anybody walked by and touched it and got unclean, they would actually take them out, in and out through the roof. So it's something that had been quite common. And I started to think about this and process this, and I thought, wow, this makes this story even more powerful. Because we hear a story of a man whose life was just in a really desperate situation, almost probably close to death, being let down into a house through roof. And in a situation which was usually left for people in coffins. And Jesus comes in and breaks into the situation in the mess of home. Woo, how did I manage that? In the mess of home. Oh dear, I'm going really wild here. Sorry about this. In the mess of home. And he comes and this man comes through the roof like a dead man. And Jesus says, here, in this home, in this apparent mess, I'm going to bring a great reversal. What is normally a position, and this man is usually would be dead usually coming in and out the house that way. But he sort of has this little thing in his mind, I'm going to do a great reversal here. I'm going to bring death into the rightful place. I'm going to bring life. I'm going to take sickness and bring health. I'm going to take sin and I'm going to bring forgiveness. I'm the God of reversals. Even in the mess, I can bring a great reversal. And I tell you what else I'm going to do, says Jesus in his head. This is my thoughts here. I've got all these people pressing in, standing. They can't even get in the place. The only people who actually sit here comfortably are the religious leaders. But the people who really matter are crowding outside the door. And I'm going to tell this man to take up his mat and walk out in full view of them. Because they're pressing in to all that I have for them and they can't reach me. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to show them physically. But what appeared to be dead coming in through the roof is able to get up under my authority and walk out carrying a mat, showing them death can become life, as I say, sickness, health, and sin can become forgiveness. When I'm in the house, Jesus said, even though it's messy, I can turn things around from what is the apparent norm. So Jesus would have been physically affected by that. You can just imagine Peter saying, sorry, Jesus, sir. You know you were a carpenter once. You couldn't give us a hand making doing a bit of a repair before you lie down. You have your tea tonight, can you? But yeah, Jesus is in the mess. And he had that mess and that apparent disturbance had a direct influence on his well-being. But he saw the bigger picture in this situation. And so often in our home, we can be searching for home in the house. And this is a Paul lookalike here. I've mentioned before Peter and Sarah Portal, who work in Manaberg, South Africa. And they were a guy who used to work for the BBC as a kids TV presenter, and God called him out to South Africa, not just to be a missionary, but to actually live in one of the most difficult, violent places in South Africa. And they have multiple gang murders every week, and God called him to live and have home amongst the people in the injustice of the fact that Manaberg even exists with all the history of South Africa and the segregation and the violence that's gone on since then and the poverty and the separation and the injustice. God said, I want to put you as my home in that place, and I want you to set up home there and just to live and to be, not just to jet in. He says so many missionaries come in, he says, with great intent and do great stuff and preach the gospel, see people's lives change, and then go back to their comfortable places to live outside the area. But he said God really called him, and he subsequently married a girl from South Africa called Sarah. And I listened to him, and he was preaching at St. Peter's Broccoli a little while ago. And he says this, living in a place where those are thrown out on the margins or so-called margins of society is not a particularly radical thing to do. Inviting drug addicts and gangsters to come and live in your home as we reparent them into fullness and freedom and faith is not radical, but utterly reasonable as a response to the gospel. As we see the old man of heroin and all the other things that have affected people's lives die, we then see a resurrection and a growing into an awareness of the prophetic and spiritual DNA that their Heavenly Father has placed in them. Beautiful. So he says it's not an easy job, but it's a perfectly and utterly reasonable response to the God being at home in us, placing you in that place and inviting the people, the outsiders, as it were, into that place of dwelling, in almost into from the den of lions in the desolate city, to come and experience refuge and the dwelling place of God with men. And so we've heard this morning, haven't we, about how Jesus is God of great reversals in the home. And so many people are searching for home in the house and in our houses and in our community. And God can come and break through and change situations, great reversals. But how about us? Us sitting here in this comfortable place in Lichfield this morning. And God's been taking me on quite a journey, almost a painful one, really. I've been reading a guy called Henry Nguyen, who was a Catholic priest, but last century, I suppose it is now. He died in 1996, and he's written quite a lot of stuff, and he actually went to work in a community, left the priesthood, as it were, and went to work in a community of people with disabilities, mental and physical disabilities, and in a sort of residential situation. But he's a very deep thinker. And he wrote a book called The Return of the Prodigal Son, and I found it on an old one on eBay because I don't think it's in print anymore. And he's been talking about the highs and the lows of the story of the prodigal son. And it's one of those books where you're reading it and you're thinking, ouch, I don't like this, God. But you could be compelled to read it because God's stirring something in your heart. And you go through this sort of roller coaster ride of yes, saying as he talks about the Jesus and the parable of the prodigal son, and about the younger son who sort of spends his life away from God and comes back to the father. And you say, yes, that's God, that's me. And he does his reflection and the rawness and the reality. He says, yeah, that's me as well. And then he goes on to talk about the older son. And you go, yeah, that's me as well, God. This is really painful. And I am both of these guys. And God really spoke to me in a powerful way, in a way that I just thought, ow, this hurts, God, but I'm going to go there. And he says, how many times in your life and in your church life, he says this, have you felt lost while still at home? How many times have you felt lost while still at home? How many times have you heard joy in the house as you've come near and felt utterly lost, utterly distant? How many times, if you're really honest, in your life, in church life, have you come to this place on the Sunday morning and felt lost in the house? You're supposed to be at home and you've stood there and you've stood outside the door and you can hear the worship. And you come and stood in here, and I'm talking to me, this is, God was saying this to me. How many times have you stood here, heard the worship, heard the joy in the house, but you've been lost while still at home? How many times have you stood there and felt unnoticed, unappreciated, rejected in the house, if you're really honest? It's not the sort of thing you like to think about, and you put your smiley face on and you say, yeah, this is great, I'm fine. But if you're really honest, and this guy was saying this, and I was going, oh, gosh. Ouch. And I think I'm really honest, as he's been very honest here, particularly over lockdown, I felt, you know, and subsequently, it's taken me a long time to get back to that place where I should be with God. And it's had to drag me kicking and screaming sometimes. And I've truly felt this at times. I've stood in the house, just like the elder son, and heard the joy and the singing, said, God, this is hard. And the father in this story wanted both sons to engage with the fullness of home. And one thing I think I've probably been told, and it passed me by, but in both instances in this parable, we know about the father running out to the son, but actually the father also goes out to the elder son to call him in. He goes out, he treats both sons with that care and that compassion. He goes out to where they are. It's not just the prodigal that he goes out to. And he says, I want you to engage in all the fullness of home. David says this in Psalm 27, doesn't he? One thing I ask of the Lord. This only do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. That's the cry of the father as well in that story. I want you to engage with all the fullness of all that I have for you. And I get it that you're standing there and you're feeling not in the right place. But I'm coming out to you. I'm coming out to you. I'm going to treat you the same way as I would the younger son. And I'm coming out to you and saying, come and engage with all the fullness of home. So whether you're in that place where you feel that home for you is messy, physical home, that is, the way you dwell, it feels like you're in a desolate city. And there's wild animals all around, and you're saying to God, I can't see you here. You've talked about being my refuge, and I can't see that you are my dwelling place. Yeah, I know you're up in heaven, and God says, yeah, I'm also here with you in that desolate place. Or whether you need God to do a great reversal for you this morning, and in the mess of home or where you are in life, you need God to take from the death what normally would be death and bring life in the mess. And to bring healing and hope and forgiveness. Or whether you feel that you're searching for home in the house this morning. You have some experience of God, but you haven't quite got there yet. And you're on a journey. And Jesus said, you know what? That I am here for you. Wherever you are, come and sit at my table. And the times over and over these last few weeks, God said, come and sit at the table. Come and sit at the table and we'll have a chat. And you know what? While we're there, we'll have something to eat. We'll have something to drink. I'm going to engage with you. Come and enjoy home, even though your enemies are around about you. We've sung it so many times, haven't we? Though we feel surrounded. Come and eat, come and sit, come and dine, come and enjoy what I have for you. Or whether you in that place as well where you feel like you're lost while still at home, if you're truly honest, and it's a painful thing to admit. And you're standing there, hearing the sound of joy in the house. And you're thinking, oh, you know what? I've just been rejected too many times. Too many people have hurt me. I'm too hurt. I can't go there anymore. There's just one time too many. I just can't do this. I just want to walk away. I want to crawl away and hide. And the father comes out, not just the younger son, but he comes out to you and says, come and enjoy the fullness of home once again. I want you to be part of this. And so he says, you know what? You're the place I want to dwell. You're the place I want to dwell. And so I just want to end this morning by saying, you know, as we go into communion, wherever you are on this journey, whichever of those may apply to you this morning, God has a place for you. He longs for you to find home in him. He is our home. He is our dwelling place. But it sometimes takes a bit of an effort, and it takes a bit of like looking at ourselves and going, God, this hurts, but I know that's what you want for me. You want the best for me. come and sit at the table this morning as we engage in communion together. I'm going to be standing at the front, and maybe one or two people, Vanessa and Steve, will come, and we'll just pray. If you want to pray about any of those things that I've talked about this morning, come and join at the table. Come and engage with the one who died for you, whose body was broken, whose blood was shed, so that you could find home and be the place where God chooses to dwell. Amen.
Yeah, so just as we go into this time of communion now, I want to read just a couple of verses from Luke and one from Isaiah as well. And he took bread, gave thanks and broke it, and gave it to them saying, "This is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, after the supper, he took the cup saying, "This is the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you." And then the one from Isaiah chapter 53 verse 5, it says, "But he was pierced for our transgressions," or sins. "He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace, and with his wounds," or by his wounds, "we are healed." And so maybe some people here feel like they need a bit of, they've just came with some baggage or with something that needs to be healed. And so maybe as we share communion, and as Penny said, God is home. We can come to home. We can come to God with those burdens, with those baggages that we have, and with those things that need to be healed. And we can remember that it's by his wounds, by Jesus' wounds, that we find that healing. And so, yeah, if you need prayer, then there'll be a few people at the front as well. But there's a gluten-free station at the back, as well as non-gluten-free at the back, and then there's two at the front. So feel free to come forward and receive the bread and wine now.